Hey everyone, this is the I-117 podcast for anyone who wants to look at the intersection of faith, justice, and equality in this world. I'm your host, Ross Weingartner. I hope everyone out there is doing well throughout all of this, throughout the quarantine, throughout the pandemic. I know that it's been extremely stressful for everyone, but know that we're all here to support one another. If you're someone who's out there working, putting themselves in danger, working to keep society running as best we can through all this, I truly applaud you. As we continue to move through this period of hardship, I hope that we all remember this. We remember that the people that work in jobs or careers that are sometimes overlooked, remember that they're still out there putting their health at risk, and make sure that they aren't being looked down upon in the future. One of the things that I hope comes from all of this is that the people that fill these positions, the people that work these jobs, are granted more respect. You know, I've been pleasantly surprised by the response from some companies, large and small, that have increased the pay, they've allowed their employees to have more sick leave, all of these things. And I hope that this isn't forgotten in the future as we overcome this. I would like to see these things become permanent parts of those employment policies, you know, because employees that are sick with anything that's contagious, they shouldn't feel like they have to come to work and then spread it to others. They should be able to take the time, you know, get proper health care, proper treatment. Just something that's been on my mind. Thank you all that have been out there working and doing what you can to keep things running as best as we can as we go through all of this. This week, I read an article that came from Reuters, and it talks about how the United Nations World Food Program said that they expect the number of people feeling food insecurity would approach 265 million. Now, the World Food Program is looking at the economic impacts on travel, tourism, hospitality industries. And we already see that here in the United States, here in our local communities. We're seeing concerns from small businesses, restaurants, who are being negatively impacted to the point that they're having to make hard cuts, hard choices. And sadly, we can't expect things to immediately go back to normal anytime soon. Even as restrictions are slowly being relaxed, medical experts and professionals, people that know this stuff, they don't see a full relaxation of things like social distancing for quite some time. So people that work in these industries, business owners, they're looking at months and months of adjusting their business model and trying to find ways to stay afloat. And if we take those concerns from the United States, from our communities, let's think about regions or even entire countries that rely primarily on tourism. There will be huge amounts of people, huge percentages of people that lose their livelihood, and they have no place to turn. The article has a few quotes from Arif Hussein, who is a representative from the World Food Program, and he notes that people are going to end up facing hard challenges as they struggle to afford their basic needs. So he gives us the example of a food vendor. If a food vendor has to sell his stall in order to provide shelter, to keep a roof over his family's head, then it's going to take him a long time to ever make that back up. It's going to create this spiral because now what's he do for a living? How can he afford the bills in the future, the next month, the next year, whatever it's going to be? How is he going to be able to lift himself out of poverty? Some people will have to sell assets that they may not ever recover. This will mean that the economic recovery from the crisis could take a long time, and some people will never recover from this. Hussein especially worries about those in countries that don't have governmental safety nets to support citizens through this difficult and challenging time. Now, we're in some uncharted waters here in this interconnected world of ours. As the world faces these problems together, we're going to see the effects and fallout of this virus, of this pandemic across the world. And food hardships are just going to be one of the ways in which we'll see it. We're going to see it here in America. We're going to see it everywhere. And one of the things that we're going to have to consider is, what can we do? What is our responsibility? And for most of us, we probably see the most immediate answer as our local food banks, our local food pantries. These are local organizations that are trying to step up. They're trying to provide people with the food that they need. There's an article from the New York Times that came out a little bit earlier this month, towards the beginning of April. And it looked at the potential for these local groups to actually fail to meet the ongoing demands, the ongoing needs of their communities. They looked at Feeding America, which is the nation's largest network of food banks. And Feeding America has said that they're projecting a $1.4 billion shortfall for the next 6 months. And Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, he donated $100 million. And so you hear that and you think, this is awesome. This is great. And it is. $100 million, I can't even fathom what that actually looks like, what that actually is. But that $1.4 billion is so huge that $100 million, that's only one fourteenth of what they need to make up that shortfall. That shows the strain that's being put on these food banks. The article also talked about a food bank in Pittsburgh and a video that had, I believe, over a million views showing a miles-long line of cars that were waiting for food. And images like that, videos like that, they're not going anywhere. I mean, this came from the beginning of April. Just in the last few weeks, unemployment numbers have skyrocketed. We're around 25 million Americans right now. The article also points out that the food banks, they typically receive a bulk of their food as donations from restaurants, hotels, casinos, places like that. But as these businesses have had to close down or they've had to reduce costs, there's nothing to donate to the food banks. And so this has forced the food banks to go out and purchase food that normally would be donated to them. And so that has increased the cost. Further into the article, we have examples. It already talked about Pittsburgh. It looks at food banks and pantries in Seattle, Las Vegas, New York, Omaha, all these places where food banks are trying to move quickly to meet huge demands and are suffering under huge strain. An important note from this article is that the amount of food distributed by food banks is not as much as through government programs like SNAP. But the challenge is getting people signed up to the government programs because they have to sign up and then there's a processing time. So working together, the food banks are usually good for filling in the cracks, for helping people as their applications are being processed and before the governmental programs can actually kick in. But what's happening, according to the article, is that so many people are applying that the processing times are rising and rising and rising. Now, I'm pretty sure that we've talked about the food insecurity before on this podcast. If you recall, 40 million people in America are food insecure. meaning that they don't have a consistent way to get the food for themselves, for their family. That's 1 in 8 people, about the population of California. And those numbers were from before the pandemic, before the COVID-19 outbreak. It's pretty clear with what we're seeing in the economy, with the unemployment rates, that those numbers are going to go up. At least for some amount of time. We don't know how long, but for at least some amount of time, those numbers are going to go up. Another article that goes with this theme of fighting against hunger. This actually comes from January. It was about a book that a man named Jeremy Everett wrote. Mr. Everett, he works in South Texas, and the book that he wrote was called I Was Hungry. And at the time, Everett was working for a Baptist Social Services agency. Okay, this would be during Katrina at that time. And he saw the struggles that FEMA had in addressing the disaster. He noticed that FEMA had to reach out and create relationships with community-based organizations in order to work with them to address the fallout from the disaster. And so what Mr. Everett did afterward was he created an organization called the Texas Hunger Initiative. And what that does is works to create partnerships between the USDA, Texas state agencies, businesses, and communities. Each member of this partnership is able to bring their strength to the table and create a system that offers the best of all worlds. So he's looking at the federal government. How can the federal government, with all of these tools, with all these resources, all this money, help state agencies trickle that money down, work with the community organizations, the people that know the needs of their community? So how can they get those federal resources into the hands of the people that are working in the community to best use those resources? And this is a way to make a focused effort in overcoming the challenges of hunger. Mr. Everett really tries to stress the fact that this is not something, defeating hunger is not something that we can do on our own. We need to work together. We need to have partnerships between all of these groups. And it's really, I'm thinking about everything that's going on in our world right now. And that same sentiment rings true for all of it. As we move through this crisis, and as I've said before, this is something that's going to continue for quite some time. Both the virus, the health effects, but then the economic impacts, the instability, not just in America, but I'm talking across the world. We need to work together at all levels, global level, national level, state, community. We need to all work together because we all have strengths in this fight. And working against one another is just going to be counterproductive. You know, we need to have well-funded, well-staffed government agencies that are ready to work through the paperwork, the bureaucracy. That stuff has to happen. And we need people that can do that. We need the government to do that. We need to have private businesses that are able to work with community groups, with organizations to make resources available, whether it's donations, you know, excess food, soaps, necessities, whether it's through monetary giving, whatever. We need local groups, local organizations like the food banks that are able to address the immediate needs of people. People who have suddenly lost their jobs or they found themselves in a situation where one medical emergency has knocked off all of their savings. All these groups, they need to be working together in lockstep to get through this. So I want to pivot a little bit. Mr. Everett's book title, okay, it's I Was Hungry. And the title comes from Matthew 25, verse 35. But I actually want to look at that entire section. I want to go back to verse 31 and then read through verse 40 here to really get an idea of what's happening here. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you all who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Now, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about this verse. I'm thinking about the hungry, thinking about the poor, the impoverished, the people that, you know, could just use a hand, could use some help through all this. And I think that the meaning here is plain. I think that Jesus' words here are plain. We are called to help everyone. There's no asterisk, no aside, no exception. There are no bounds set on the charge. Jesus isn't saying you have to help a person as long as they look like you, they share your culture, they come from the same background, they make the same life decisions. There's nothing that says the person has to fulfill any type of criteria, that the person has to behave in any type of way, or adhere to any type of philosophy. We are called to help everyone. But as people, it's easy to make excuses for, you know, why you shouldn't help that other person. It doesn't take much to find something, some reason, whether it's big or large, that makes you think that that other person is not worthy of the help, of the aid, of the money, of the time that you can give them. And we can couch it in terms, hide it in our minds, lie to ourselves, try to give us some sort of out so that we can feel good about our decision. We can believe that it's someone else's problem. We can believe that it's that person's problem. We can tell ourselves that they were the ones that made poor choices. They were the ones that messed up and found themselves in this predicament. But you know what? Even if they did, is that really an out? Is that really okay? Is that a reason for us to turn away from our brothers and sisters? I mean, we can't do that. And who are we to say that a person who is hit upon hard times is not worthy of dignity? I mean, we're not perfect. I'm not perfect. To God, to Jesus, we are flawed. We are broken. Do our actions and everything that we do show that we are really worthy of love and grace? But yet, Jesus isn't withholding. So then, how can we possibly do so? One of my worries through all of this, through the pandemic, through the economic fallout, is that we as people start to build walls between ourselves and others. And we start to separate us versus them. We start to feel so unsure, unsteady, and even frightened about the world that we determine the only thing to do is to cut off those that aren't like us. We become suspicious of the people that we deem, that we look at as outsiders. And outsiders, it's a broad term, a feeling that we can use as a tool, more like a weapon, whenever it's convenient. Already we're hearing reports of increased racism, hatred against people of Asian descent over this. There have been images from protests recently that have anti-Semitic slogans, iconography. And this is traditionally what happens when there's a disaster. Often people fall into their communities and exclude others out of fear or out of ignorance. Take most disasters and you'll see it. This goes from the treatment of Muslims or anyone that was seen as possibly Muslim after September 11th to the Jewish people being blamed for the Black Plague hundreds of years ago. But it doesn't have to be this way. We can overcome our flawed base instincts. We can fight against those urges in our communities and continue to reach across differences. We need each other now more than ever. Think about this. As Americans, you know, we're familiar with the phrase, united we stand, divided we fall. And that same sentiment is shared in Matthew. You know, Matthew 12, verse 25, Jesus says, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And as we all face this threat as a people, we need each other. And we don't have the luxury of thinking otherwise. Currently, America is facing over 50,000 deaths from the virus. And that number is going up every single day. We have over 25 million people that are currently unemployed. As Americans, we can sometimes feel protected. We can sometimes feel isolated from the trials and trauma of this world. But this is a wake-up call, because we're not. We can suffer just as much as anybody else. Like I said, we are all in this together. We're in this with the rest of the world. And you know, there will be times where we may be in the position to help others. Help peoples, help nations that are struggling. And at other times, we're going to be on the other end. And we're going to need help. We're going to have to ask for expertise, cooperation from others. But at the end of the day, the only way to do this, the only way to lessen the pain, the hardship, the sadness, the tragedy that our world faces is to work together. Come together as one people and stay united. And with that, we're going to wrap up this week's podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you're not a subscriber, I encourage you to do so. If you like what you hear, leave a 5-star review. I really, really appreciate that. That helps in getting the word out a little bit so that more people can listen. If you want to get in contact, you want to follow us on Facebook, we're at facebook.com/I17, all spelled out. I put some articles, just some updates, things like that on there. We're also going to start doing some community game nights virtually. A way for us to, or for everybody, I guess, to kind of keep in contact with one another. This week, we're going to be doing Jackbox. So if you're interested, go to the Facebook page. There is a Google form. Just click the link and then just type in your email address. And that way I can send you the Zoom invite. All you need to have to participate is one device for Zoom and then another device that can get on a web page. You don't need to buy anything. So if you're interested, by all means, sign up. I'd like to hang out, get some sort of fellowship community, because it's tough, you know. And with that, yeah. That's all, and I hope you all have a good week, and I'll see you next Monday.